Well, good morning. It's 8:06 here on KPCW Park City. I'm Connor Thomas, filling in for Leslie Thatcher on today's Local News Hour. It's Tuesday, September 24th. Coming up later on the program, we'll be speaking with Summit County Manager Shane Scott about tomorrow's Summit County Council meeting, then have a conversation with our very own Park City reporter, Parker Malatesta, about an emergency response exercise in Canyons Village today that should draw a large law enforcement presence, but no danger to the public. And then finally, Nathan Moulton, he's a board member at Timpanogos Valley Theater, will speak about the theater's 20th anniversary and an upcoming production. He'll be joined by cast member Jared Wright this morning. Well, the existing contract between Park City and the Sundance Film Festival is now set to expire in 2026. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports.
The current agreement between the two parties, which dates back to 2013, was due to be renewed October 1st. On Thursday, Sundance informed Park City that it does not intend to renew the agreement. The contract will be in place for the next two January festivals in 2025 and 2026. Last year, the nonprofit's leaders asked the city council to extend the renewal deadline as the film festival worked on a new strategic plan. Since then, Sundance has launched a process to explore a new location for the festival starting in 2027. Park City is in the running to keep the annual event. However, it would be under a new footprint with more screenings and events in Salt Lake City. Boulder, Colorado, and Cincinnati, Ohio are also in the running to host the Independent Film Festival. A final decision is expected early next year. In a joint press release Friday, Park City and Sundance say a new contract will be written if the film festival decides to stay in Utah, which has been the event's home for 40 years. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
And we're keeping an eye on traffic around the Wasatch back today. The Utah Department of Transportation says there are currently no crashes right now, but I am watching that usual backup on eastbound I-80 at the turnoff to US 40 begin. The other backup is on the other side of the Silver Creek Junction. It's coming westbound or north on US 40. Getting on to westbound I-80, that flyover has been closed for about a week and should be closed for another 2 weeks for repaving. So keep an eye out for that, particularly as you leave work today. That will cause backups on 40 as well as 224, which seems to be most people's detour around the area. Right now, dozens of Summit County seniors may be displaced if the Oakley Assisted Living Facility Elk Meadows is sold to a Midway-based PTSD and Addiction Recovery Center. Midway's Chateau Recovery Center is interested in expanding to Oakley by purchasing Elk Meadows, Summit County's only assisted living facility. Gary Bynan of Kalina Real Estate Partners, who represents Elk Meadows Ownership Group, says there is a pending contract, but it's far from final and could still fall through.
We're actually meeting with all the residents and families of residents on Monday to go over this in more detail and answer any questions that they may have, and also with our employees.
Some employees plan to protest before the 3:30 p.m. meeting yesterday, and a handful of residents joined them. They don't want to see Elk Meadows close. Oakley resident Darcy DeBernardi agrees. Her mom lives at Elk Meadows.
I'm angry, to be honest, because it's a big deal to move someone that's got that's older and has some dementia.
According to Elk Meadows Activities Director Caitlin Blackshire, there are 42 rooms with about 30 residents in them right now. The rest are in hospital care and may return once their condition improves.
Most of the people that live at Elk Meadows have grown up in the Camas Valley or surrounding areas. They've been there their entire lives. I work there. Some of them were my school teachers.
If the sale goes through, they'll need to find a new facility. Kalina employs Rocky Mountain Care to manage Elk Meadows, and Rocky Mountain has a network of locations around the state and the country, including the lodge in Heber. Bynan says that may help residents and employees transition if it comes to that, but DeBernardi says Heber's two assisted living facilities are already running 40-plus person wait lists, including people from Elk Meadows.
People are coming in frantically and putting their loved ones on the wait list.
DeBernardi expects she'll need to drive to Provo or the Salt Lake Valley to find a place for her mom just after she moved her to Elk Meadows in June. Elk Meadows has met with the state's Department of Health and Human Services for advice on a closure plan. Bynan says they intend to follow state requirements, such as giving 30 days notice should the facility close.
And we will be flexible if necessary and needed to, you know, work with them beyond those 30 days to find them a good place.
Many residents heard about the pending sale when Oakley City posted a courtesy notice online September 17th, directing public input to city planner Stephanie Wollstonecombe until September 27th. The notice says Chateau Recovery plans, quote, a 56-bed residential treatment facility primarily for first responders and military veterans suffering from drug and alcohol addictions, substance use disorders, traumas, and other disabilities. Wollstonecombe says the services are already allowed under Elk Meadow's current permit with the city, which Chateau Recovery would inherit. That means the PTSD and Addiction Recovery Center could open quickly once it closes the deal. Blackshear says those services are important, but reiterates that Elk Meadows is the only assisted living facility in the county. She says the residents have done more for her life than she's done for theirs.
They're just always so grateful for anything I plan or do. I'm really sad to think that I might not get to see them every day.
Well, the weather is getting chillier here in the Wasatch Back, and here with a look at what's going on right now, we have from ABC's Meteorology Center, meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Good morning, Connor. Yeah, we've got some cool temperatures out there, 30s in the Heber Valley. We've got temperatures in the low 40s up towards Park City. So it is a chilly start. Sweaters and hoodies are probably needed this morning. But, you're going to be able to shed those as we go throughout the afternoon. We're going to be talking about lots of sunshine returning across the area this afternoon. In fact, we're looking at sunny skies and temperatures climbing into the mid to upper 70s this afternoon in Park City. We'll see those highs in the Heber Valley getting into the low to mid 80s out there. And then as we go into tonight, not as cool with clear skies. We'll see our temperatures dropping down only to around 50 in Park City and into the mid 40s in the Heber Valley. But as we go into the afternoon hours, here comes the heat. The heat dome builds back in across the area. So we're looking at highs in Park City around 80 degrees, and highs will be into the mid to upper 80s in the Heber Valley as we go into your Wednesday afternoon. And now that'll be the pattern as we go throughout the rest of the week. Look for those highs in the upper 70s to low 80s in Park City on Thursday. But highs in the Heber Valley back into the mid 80s across the area, and we're in the mid to upper 80s again to close out the week on your Friday in the Heber Valley with highs right around 80 in Park City. Again, lots of sunshine each and every day. The chance of rain slim to none, and we're leaning closer towards none as that high pressure ridge really builds in, creates sinking air, doesn't allow the clouds to develop with the air rising, and therefore you can't get any rain. And then as we head into the weekend, more of the same. A lot of sunshine, temperatures still warm. Saturday, we're talking low 80s in Park City and highs near 90 in the Heber Valley. In fact, we could approach record temperature levels or record highs for your Friday and Saturday. So we're going to have to watch that closely. And we stay warm into your Sunday with more of the same. And, yes, lots of sunshine. Now, there is a weak front that moves through as we head into Sunday night. That may take the edge off of the heat a little bit. So as we kick off next week, we may drop our temperatures back down into the lows in the 30s and 40s and highs only in the 70s across the area. But that's not going to be until next week. Fingers crossed. Between now and then, get ready for some near record warmth as we go throughout the week as those temperatures will be warming up and lots of sunshine. Really not seeing the next chance of rain until sometime maybe later next week. So any of your outdoor recreating plans should be pretty good out there. Connor?
All right. ABC's Cedric Haynes, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And the Summit County Council meets in its council chambers in Colville tomorrow. On the phone with me with a preview of what looks like a pretty packed agenda is the county manager, Shane Scott. Good morning.
Good morning, Connor. How are you?
Good. Well, let's just jump into it because the meeting begins at around 1:45 and it looks like it's going to be a marathon one. It begins with a update on an upcoming request for proposals regarding the Klein-Dolly property. Could you maybe update people on what's going on here and where is the Klein-Dolly property?
The Klein-Dolly property is in the Jeremy Ranch area. It's very close to the Jeremy Ranch Elementary School. We received some feedback from council. I think it was in the last meeting in August that they would like to see a draft proposal of a proposed request for proposal. This is a request for some assistance from the development community in what a development in this area might look like. I think we're around 29 acres total, only 17 of which are buildable or usable. So there will be a significant amount of open space in this area. We're looking for some if you looked at the RFP and the staff report, we're looking at up to 210 units residential units, as well as some light commercial in the area, some mixed uses there. So we're looking for feedback from the council, and we'd like to put this request for proposal out to development groups really quickly after the Wednesday's meeting.
Yeah, it looked really quick. The staff report said issuing it next week is the goal. Have you heard from council and whether or not they think that's realistic?
Well, at our last meeting, I think there was some that felt like we were moving a little too fast, and some that couldn't believe this wasn't done already. So we're trying to get some consensus from all five council members, and I do think it's realistic. I think we've got an RFP that is very close. I think council has reviewed it and will have some comments about it. But I think we're close enough that we can make those comments in our meeting and receive those and make those tweaks and put it out next week.
You mentioned housing, light commercial. The other thing that looks like it's included is a new fire station. Could you talk about what the Park City Fire District is asking for?
Yes. Park City Fire District got wind of this proposal on this particular piece of property, and they have some studies that show that they would be able to respond quicker in other areas of the county to potential EMS and fire related calls. So they are asking if they could actually give up their station on the Pine Brook side and exchange that for land on the Jeremy Ranch side in order to have this better response and call time. So we're looking at that as part of the proposal, and again asking a development group to weigh in on that piece as well, and what might happen on the Pine Brook side with that 1.5 approximate acres.
Yeah, that parcel is, I think, between the ward and the Ecker Hill Middle School there. Do you know, so that's part of the RFP as well? You're asking a developer to look at potentially redeveloping that and envisioning it post-fire district?
Exactly right. I think it could be housing or something else. I think we're anticipating it would be housing, but we've actually heard from other organizations that might be interested in that parcel as well for other uses. I think the challenge there, in just my opinion, is that the fire station, while moving it, will provide a better service to our residents. I think the building itself is in really good shape, and tearing down a building that's in good shape is always something we want to do very carefully. So perhaps housing would be the best long-term solution there on that existing parcel. But if there's other uses we can use there, we'll look at those.
All right. Next on the agenda was a conversation about employee compensation. What's this employee compensation committee that's been meeting, I think, since March?
Yes, this is an update to council on the compensation committee. This came out of some council feedback last year as part of our budget process. Obviously, we talk a lot about employee compensation, cost of living, merit increases, and in the context of those conversations, we got some feedback from council that they wanted to convene a committee that would just really delve into compensation. What does it look like? What are we doing right? What do we maybe need to tweak? How are our benefits matching up with others? And so the work of this compensation committee has been very detailed. E-First, our county clerk, has taken this committee on and done a wonderful job in convening us. We have two council members, Council Member Roger Armstrong and Council Member Melina Stevens, both served on the committee. So we're excited to bring this back to the entire council and update them on the work of this committee and some of the documents we've already produced and we'd like to present to the council.
Yeah, because in previous budget discussions, and again, budget season for y'all is end of the year, roughly coincides with the calendar year. It sounds like certain council members have wanted to do employee compensation a little differently. So is this the first time you've done such a committee, and will it be a feature of every budget discussion from here on out?
I don't know that we'll convene this committee in such an intense manner every year. I think that we're setting up ourselves with some recommendations for the future that we probably wouldn't need to address every year or could address as a council in an easier fashion. We are looking at our evaluation systems, you know, is some of the best practices these days would call us call for a decoupling of the evaluation system and the merit compensation that we give the employees. We're looking at all those kinds of different scenarios and see what's best for us. We haven't fleshed all of that out yet, but we've done a lot of good work. We got some recommendations to the council for this year. But I think every year we'll probably just look at what the compensation committee has done. And of course, maybe every few years we would meet again.
Yeah, it looks like one of the problems that was teased out in the committee and that they talk about in their staff report is employee retention in an employee-friendly market. Are you losing people?
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. It's a concern we have every day. We're retaining and recruiting the best employees we can get under the financial restraints that we have is perhaps our number one concern as an administration. So we are losing people, and it's hard to keep people, and we're competing with other employers in the region, and of course we draw a lot from outside of the Summit County area. With Salt Lake City and other employers that pay well and to compensate their folks well. So it's a constant struggle, and we're always trying to make ourselves stand out in certain ways. And if you read the report, we also talk a lot about culture. I think creating a positive culture, or one where people want to work, is as important as compensation. So we're trying to do that and trying to make Summit County a wonderful place to work. It is a wonderful place to work, as you well know. We're blessed to be in the geographic area we're in. So we're trying to take advantage of all those positives that make it a wonderful place to work and keep as many people as we can.
Well, certainly it was a tough place to find housing. That's something that's mentioned in the report. And you mentioned competing with people in the Salt, or employers in the Salt Lake Valley, where many employees already live. Do you know how, like, what percentage of your employees commute from outside Summit County right now?
I do. It's around 42% come from outside of the county, and unfortunately that number's increasing every year. So the number of people that live in the county and work for the county is decreasing, and so we're trying to head that off. We recognize that not everyone wants to live in the county, but we do acknowledge that most people do. Most people that do work for the county would like to live in the county if they could, and the cost of housing obviously is that number one prohibitive fact that makes that challenging. But so we're trying to quell that change as more and more people that we hire are coming from outside of the county. We're trying to stave that off if we can.
And I guess this is it for budget discussions on tomorrow's agenda, but I gather more and more intense discussions are coming as the fall and winter starts. Can you talk a little bit about budget season at Summit County? And I think for Park City listeners, they might be surprised at the size of the county's budget when compared to, you know, a government like Park City Municipal, for example. And what's the difference there? And what are you working with as far as, just the coffers when it comes to spreading that money around?
Yeah, good budget's I like to say it's a really enjoyable time of the year. It is probably the most important action that a county council takes is adopting the budget. We have a lot of challenges specifically this year in the budget. I'm actually presenting my budget to the county council a week from tomorrow on October 2nd. That's the first real look at the numbers that they'll have. We'll spend every council meeting throughout October and November going through that budget refining the necessary budget departments. We a county has a lot of different services than a city does. The city has different services than a county does. We've got sheriff's office is about a third of our budget overall. So we've got 1,800 square miles that he's got to cover patrol, and that's a significant undertaking. We have public health is another major department that health departments come out of counties in Utah. So there's a lot of those kinds of differences, and we're trying to do the best we can with the resources we've been given. We do have some challenges this year we're trying to face.
Yeah, and can you talk a little bit about pending truth in taxation? This was a discussion that came up last week. Can you put it in the right context? just with the sales tax that you're also proposing at the same time? Are there going to be two tax increases?
It's unlikely there would be two tax increases. We're still actually evaluating whether or not to go through the truth and taxation process with the Summit County Council. It's my recommendation that we do. If the sales tax measure that is on the ballot does not pass, we'll have a significant shortfall in revenues. And I think truth and taxation could be one of the ways that we can meet that shortfall. We would necessitate some cuts, and we would make those. But cutting all the way from what that tax would mean to us would be a real challenge. Right now, we're evaluating whether to go through the truth and taxation process. We do have to make that decision before the ballot initiative on November 5th. So we don't have to make the decision to raise taxes, but we do need to make the decision to go through the process of raising taxes. You can always go through that truth and taxation process and not raise taxes. You can keep the rate where it is. You can lower the rate. So the decision to actually raise taxes would not come until December. But I believe if the council decides to go through the truth and taxation process, I think once the ballot initiative, if it were successful, I think they would drop that process probably almost immediately.
All right. And also on the agenda tomorrow, and I think this will be a feature every week, is a discussion about Dakota Pacific's proposed project in Kimball Junction and the public-private partnership just next to it that the county wants to join with the developer on. Does this mean we're done with private subcommittee talks, like, for good now?
I think that is the intent. I wouldn't rule out the fact that we might get together once or twice. As a staff member, I will be meeting with Dakota Pacific staff on several occasions. But I do believe that the majority of the work that the subcommittee performed is complete. We've gone through a master planning process. We've seen what is possible, and I think we've really produced some really exciting documents and ideas that have been generated through this process. And I'm very excited myself on what we produced, and of course there's as some of our council members like to say, the devil's in the details, and those details are what will be fleshed out in the next couple of weeks every Wednesday in our council meetings, whether how much are things going to cost, who's going to pay for what does residential density look like. Those are obviously the most important things, and those have not been discussed by the subcommittee in any way, shape, or form so far. So that those things will be fleshed out in the public eye, and I'm anxious to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, the council members have taken great pains to say that the subcommittee was not for negotiating with Dakota Pacific Real Estate. How are we supposed to know what was said, though?
Well, I guess there's probably no way to know, besides the fact that I can just speak for myself. I was in those meetings. I know that Councilmember Hart and Councilmember Robinson were both very, very careful to only represent their own opinions. They were never negotiating dollars and cents. They were never negotiating densities. We never even talked about that east third, I guess, of the project, which is where the Dakota Pacific Real Estate Company would like to build units. All we talked about was that there would be a time that would come, and that, I think that time is now, that we would start talking about densities and what those might look like. So I'm very proud of the efforts we've made, and it's been very, to go from where we were even a year and a half ago to where we are today is remarkable. So I'm very proud of our council and the work they've done, and we've had legal counsel in all those meetings, and we've been very careful about what we've said and what we've done.
Yeah, a year ago, haggling over densities really turned into this stalemate and a somewhat related lawsuit. What makes you think it'll be different this time?
Well, I'm just hopeful. I just think that we've come a long way. I think our relationship is very good. We've set some of those let bygones be bygones and set some of those legal wrangling aside for now. We may not get there. That's one likely outcome, is that we won't be able to agree on densities or who pays for what. But I'm just very hopeful. I think that as we've looked at some of the community benefits that have come out of this master planning process, I think we've got a lot of council members and in turn some residents that are really excited about what might be in this area, that maybe a tech park isn't what's going to be best for our community in this area, and then we could really do a exciting place where people want to gather and be and recreate. And it'll, I think it's just a really exciting proposal.
And the last time I checked the court docket on that lawsuit, it said the stay on litigation that was stipulated will expire October 8th. Are you thinking of extending that or dropping the lawsuit entirely? What's the plan there?
I think we will just stay until we have something. I think the intent is to have some kind of a memo of understanding that we will put together this calendar year. I think that's the intent, that the council would like to do that before December 31st. And if that happens, I think we would have to do one more stay from October to whenever that is. But I think that may be the last stay of the lawsuit. And I think after that, we'll either probably get back to litigating or we'll put that off for an extended period of time.
All right. And just quickly here, wanted to mention the Snyderville Basin Cemetery District. They're going to give you an update about they're basically getting off the ground with a potential site next to the Utah Olympic Park. Is this something the county approves of? Do you think this site is the right choice?
I do. I really like this site. I think it's currently open space, but in the development agreement, it actually mentions the cemetery as a possible use in this area. So I think it was anticipated that might be someday. I think a cemetery can be a nice open space use. I think this won't be something where we're throwing a bunch of sprinklers and some grass in an area and making it look like a traditional cemetery. I think we can do some really exciting things here. I think that the residents of the Snyderville Basin are looking for a place where they could intern their loved ones and visit and somewhere serene and peaceful. And I think this place will work. We've done a couple of test pits in the area just to evaluate the soils. And right now we think those could work. So we're hoping to get some direction from the council to move forward on this area as a possible. There's still a lot to work out, and of course they're setting their certified tax rate. That's going to be important too as we do some studies and some other things that the special service district would need to pay for. They're setting that up as well. So it's really coming together, and there's a finite amount of land in the Snyderville Basin, especially 10 acres. Everything is very valuable, and a cemetery may not be everybody's highest and best use, but I think this is a good location for that.
Yeah, and you mentioned the certified tax rate that needs to be set. Will that be voters deciding on that, or will it be the council?
I believe it is set for the voters. I think it is just the truth in taxation process. I think we had it going one direction where it didn't need to be a vote, and I think it actually doesn't. So I think it's just going through the truth in taxation process, which just would not be a vote of the public. It'd just be the vote of the council.
All right. Well, again, the Summit County Council meets tomorrow beginning at 1:45 in council chambers at the courthouse on Colville's Main Street. We've been speaking with County Manager Shane Scott. Anything else you want to mention today, Shane?
I don't think so. I think that's it for today.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thanks for your time.
Joining me on the phone is KPCW's Park City reporter, Parker Malatesta. Good morning, Parker.
Good morning, Connor. How's it going?
Pretty good. So where are you right now? I gather that there will be an emergency exercise this morning near Canyons.
Yeah, I'm chilling just by the Cabriolet lot right now. They are doing some prep work until about 10 o'clock when I'm told that the training, this kind of full-scale emergency training exercise, will begin, and they're set to go until the afternoon today. They've said till about 4. So if you do see a large presence of, you know, police and emergency vehicles in the Canyons lot, it is not an actual emergency. They're, you know, doing an exercise that's meant to help, you know, these officers prepare for emergency situations. We don't have many details on what that exercise is going to entail. I think that I've been told that's part of the point. I think there may be an element of surprise here to see just how they react, and but hoping to get more details kind of later on today. I can tell you I see cones in the parking lot and a school bus, so definitely could be some kind of evacuation exercise for the school bus.
Yeah, and I gather statewide authorities as well, so it will be quite the production, potentially with aircraft as well.
Yeah, I know for sure that it involved is the Summit County Sheriff's Office and the Park City Police Department. I have seen a few Department of Public Safety state vehicles here, but don't have absolute confirmation that they're taking part, but it would would not surprise me.
And again, that's at the Cabriolet Lot, Lower Canyons Village, from 8 to 4 p.m. I think they're going to really get underway at 10 a.m., right, Parker?
Yeah, and the lot is just closed today. So if you are coming to Canyons, don't expect to park in the Cabriolet Lot because they've closed that off and are using the full thing. So yeah, once again, training set to start at around 10 a.m., supposed to go to around 4 o'clock later today. There will be a large presence of police and emergency vehicles, so do not be alarmed if you see that at Canyons.
All right. Well, 40 degrees out there, so hope you're bundled up, Parker. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, it feels good in the sun, Connor.
All right. Good morning. And a little bit of traffic updates as well. I'm seeing a delay on eastbound I-80, kind of before that Kimball Junction exit, which is down to one lane for construction right now. So that's a delay stretching back to about the Pine Brook exit at the moment. The other thing that's growing is the westbound / northbound US 40 exit onto westbound I-80. That flyover has been closed. It will be closed for another 2 weeks for repaving. And the detour is going down to the bottom of Silver Creek Road, taking a left on I-80 to get onto the westbound highway there. But that delay is growing as well. Should be a lot worse this afternoon with everyone's egress going back into the Salt Lake Valley. And a listener has written in that there's a high-pressure gas leak on the corner of Kearns Boulevard and Comstock here in Park City. It's near the elementary school, and EMS is on site. I asked about closures, and it sounds like the entrance to the elementary school is blocked off. If you're dropping off your children, you may need to budget extra time and definitely obey all EMS and emergency response directions. Again, that's at Kearns and Comstock, right by McPolin. It looks like the entrance to McPolin may be closed. I'm going to be looking for more details on that soon, and we'll give you more. Well, architect and urban planner Megan Reacher is replacing DJ Hubler on the Sandoval Basin Planning Commission after he resigned earlier this year. Reacher has experience presenting designs to the Planning Commission. Now she'll be sitting on the other side of the table. The Summit County Council appointed her to replace Hubler September 18th. She'll serve out the remainder of his first term, which ends February 28th of next year. In an interview with council members, she says engaging county planning staff earlier usually makes projects better.
I've not really had many hardships with the planning department here or pretty much anywhere I've worked, but I've also been inclusive with them.
Reacher's a principal at the seven-person Park City-based architecture firm Place Collaborative, working on projects around the country. That includes a new visitor center at Zion National Park's eastern entrance. None of those projects are currently within Summit County. Reacher told the council she values project sustainability, especially when it comes to accommodating flood events or drought.
As well as looking at the maps and seeing what areas should be developed and develop those appropriately, and the ones that can be saved for conservation, save that.
She has associate's, bachelor's, and master's degrees in architecture and says she formerly designed new zoning in Miami, Florida at the private planning firm DPZ Co-Design. Reacher will take her seat on the seven-person Western Summit County Planning Commission at its next meeting. The volunteer board's members' experience spans the public and private planning sectors, development, and even education. High school teacher and former Park City Council candidate Matt Nagy is the newest member. Former Park City Municipal Planner McKenna Hawley won her first term last spring. Besides Reacher, real estate developer Chris Connaby is the other member whose term, his second, will expire next year. And Intermountain Park City Hospital has grown significantly since opening in 2009. KPCW's Parker Malatesta has more on the hospital's 15th anniversary.
Intermountain Park City Hospital first opened its doors in Quinns Junction on September 15th, 2009, drastically cutting travel times to medical care in the Wasatch Back. At the time, there were around 100 dedicated medical staff at the facility, but it has grown tremendously since then, now employing over 700 medical staff. The hospital has expanded to add an ICU, a new pediatric unit, and a new surgery center, along with other additions. Park City Hospital President Lori Weston says they're currently in the design phase to expand once again.
We are going to be expanding on the backside of the building. We will be expanding our ER, emergency room, trauma, and also our surgery, imaging, and lab areas. We have really outgrown those spaces. We will be adding trauma bays, pediatric ER rooms, and behavioral health, safe behavioral health rooms in that new addition. And then we will also be building out a cancer center.
The hospital added chemotherapy services last year, and Weston says they plan to provide medical and radiation oncology along with radiation therapy in 2025. The Park City Hospital is currently a trauma level 4, which means that all staff are trained in advanced trauma life support. Weston says they hope to increase services to upgrade to trauma level 3 care.
You know, that's going to take a lot of growth, which doesn't mean we can't get there, but the trauma level 3, there's 5 levels, and then there's a trauma level 2. The Murray Hospital is a trauma level 1. And at that level, you really have to have heart surgeons, you have to have neurosurgery for the brain, and those other types of support services at the hospital. So the future may get us there, but right now we will be striving for that trauma level 3.
Weston says hospital staff are holding numerous celebrations this month to celebrate the complex's 15 years of service. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Attorneys in the widely publicized murder case against a Camas mother of three are planning jury selection. The defense team may want a different venue or a wider jury pool. Camas mother of three, Corey Richens, is scheduled to stand trial for her husband's murder, attempted murder, drug distribution, and financial misdeeds over 3 weeks in May of next year. The case has made international news, and defense attorney Kathy Nestor informed a third district judge at a pretrial conference yesterday she and her team plan to motion for a change of venue. One way to keep the case in semi-county but still avoid concerns about impartiality could be to draw jurors from neighboring counties. Here's Judge Richard Mrozek.
Candidly, if we can keep the trial date and ask reasonably Salt Lake County jurors to drive up here.
Yeah.
I'd rather do that than move the case to Matheson.
Sometimes attorneys survey one or more counties to prove that a venue change is needed. It's unclear what the scope of the defense team's change of venue request will be. Mrozek says previous high-profile cases in Summit County have taken extra steps to protect jurors' identity. In the 2023 Gwyneth Paltrow civil suit that unfolded in the very same courtroom, jurors were afforded special parking and a separate entrance. Richens is charged with 11 felonies in connection with the March 2022 death of her husband, Eric Richens. Prosecutors claim she used 5 times the lethal dose of fentanyl to poison her husband for financial gain and to start a new life with another man. Richens, who wrote a children's book about grieving her husband's death, has pleaded not guilty to every count. Her attorneys expect a jury to agree, but if convicted on the charges, she could spend the rest of her life in prison. Her attorneys also said yesterday they plan to ask the court for separate charges to separate the charges into multiple trials. Richens has been held without bail since her May 2023 arrest and June 2023 detention hearing. Her attorneys want the court to reconsider that decision. A hearing for that is set October 28th. Well, a driver who hit Rocky Mountain Power equipment along Kilby Road late Sunday in Summit County left thousands without power for hours. He was cited for driving under the influence. The outage happened shortly before 10:30 at night Sunday. This according to Rocky Mountain Power. Nearly 2,300 customers in the Pinebrook area of Summit County were affected. Rocky Mountain spokesperson Jonna Whitesides says a vehicle hit a switchgear box near the intersection of Kilby Road and Pinebrook Boulevard. The Summit County Sheriff's Office says the driver was intoxicated. He allegedly failed the sobriety test and had marijuana and drug paraphernalia in the car. Deputies did not book him into jail immediately because they said he needed, quote, further medical care. He was cited for a first offense DUI, drug and paraphernalia possession, among other traffic offenses. Court records did not indicate he'd been formally charged as of mid-Monday. Rocky Mountain Power crews conducted repairs overnight, and Whitesides says power was fully restored at about 2:30 in the morning. And here with me in studio now is Nathan Moulton. He's a board member at Timpanogos Valley Theater. He's going to speak to me about the anniversary and I think an upcoming show. Good morning, Nathan.
Morning. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much for joining me. So you're celebrating 20 years of the Timpanogos Valley Theater. Congratulations, first off.
Thank you.
Can you talk a little bit about when you got involved and what it means to celebrate this anniversary?
Well, I was actually involved in the very first production, if you can believe it, 20 years ago. We began very humble beginnings. we just did a little melodrama 20 years ago, and we've been doing a couple shows every year for the community, for the adults and the teens and the community members, and then we've started adding teen shows, kids shows, and it's quite the program we got going on over there. So we're the longest running community theater there in the Heber Valley, and proud to still be going, making great theater over there.
What do you remember about the first production? What was the size of the troupe compared to what you have now?
Oh, it was a cobbled together group of misfits, basically. No, it was, you know, it was just a cast of about, you know, six or seven people. We performed in the Midway Town Hall. In those first few years, we were just, you know, we would perform at the high school, at the town hall, at other locations around the valley. And then about 10 more years ago, we got, it's actually been about 12 or 13 years now, I think. We moved into the old social hall behind City Hall there in Heber, and that's been our home ever since. So it's a cool old building, built, you know, pioneer era building, and it's a lot of upkeep, but it's our own little space, so we like it there.
Do you have any special celebrations planned for the anniversary? Is that going to be handled at the upcoming production? What have you got coming up?
We do. We're planning some celebrations throughout the next few months. We're talking about a concert and some other things. We actually were planning on a dinner theater this Saturday to celebrate, a dinner theater fundraiser, but we ended up needing to cancel that just because there was too much going on in the valley with the Heber Valley Railroad's big anniversary celebration and everything. So we're just having a normal performance this Saturday. But we will be having a reception where we'll give away some prizes and things like that just to celebrate our 20 years. So check out our social media. Just stay tuned to social media and check our website for more information on that upcoming.
Great. And it is the production Forever Plaid. I looked it up a little bit. I don't know Broadway that well, but it was first performed in 1989. Why'd you choose this one?
Yeah, this is an off-Broadway show, a little show from back then. It's just a fun show. It's fairly well known. A small cast, only four guys. But basically the plot is these four guys were a guy group from the 1950s, when these guy groups were popular, these clean-cut guys who would sing songs and like the Four Aces or the Four Freshmen or a couple that
I'm thinking
know.
Barbershop quartets. Is that the right vibe?
Not quite barbershop, okay. No. More kind of doo-wop-y type stuff, okay. Right? But anyway, so the plot, it's not huge on plot, but here's the basis of the plot is these four guys are on their way to their first big performance back in the 60s when they are hit by a school bus of Catholic schoolgirls and killed instantly. And then they get a chance to come back to Earth and do one last big performance. So it's a jukebox musical full of old songs from the 50s, like Three Coins in a Fountain, Perfidia, anyway, and then we throw in some Perry Como songs, Catch a Falling Star, some Harry Belafonte, we do some Calypso stuff. Anyway, it's kind of a mishmash, but it's a really a lot of fun, just really entertaining, a nice fun night at the theater.
It sounds like a lot to memorize. How long have you been rehearsing and working on this?
Well, we've been rehearsing for a couple months, but yeah, we do sing about 20 songs. Choreography, one of the lines in the song is the choreography is too treacherous, one of the guys says. And it's actually not too difficult, a choreography, but there's just a lot to remember. So between the music and the words and the choreography, we it keeps us on our toes, that's for sure. But we have a good time.
All right. And again, if people want to go see it this Saturday, that's the debut. And
Tomorrow night is the opening night. Oh, Wednesday is opening night. And it starts, so Wednesday through October 12th, and we perform every Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday.
Gotcha. How can people find tickets, and what's the venue again?
So it's Timpanogos Valley Theater. You can go to timpvalleytheater.com, and the theater is at 90 North, or 90 West, 100 North, there in Heber, so just right behind City Hall. But yeah, timpvalleytheater.com. Tickets range in price from $10 for kids, $16 for adults, and then if you get your premiere seats, which is the first two rows, it's $20 a ticket. So, you know, a good affordable night of fun for the family.
And there might be some thespians in the public radio listenership if they want to get involved. How do they do that?
Oh, we'll take you. just go to timpvalleytheater.com again, or look, send us a message on social media. We're on Instagram and Facebook. Or come to a show and just reach out to somebody who's working there behind concessions or taking tickets. And we would love to have anybody who's eager to volunteer. We're an all-volunteer organization, so all community-run, a 501(c) nonprofit. So we need all the help we can get, and there's always a lot to do, and we appreciate anybody who wants to jump in and give some service, community service, through, you know, helping us build sets, helping us clean our building, upkeep our old building, make costumes. We'll also take monetary donations. We love those as well. So eager to have anybody who wants to help come help.
Any fun productions planned after Forever Plaid? Or
yeah, this Christmas Christmas time, we'll do an old radio play. It's an adaptation of It's a Wonderful Life. And we've done that the last few years. Kind of making it a tradition, and it's just a fun little radio play where actors go up to their microphones and it's like they're performing a radio drama with a live audience, and we'll have a piano up there and they'll do some musical numbers, some jingles, and then so that's a good little show for the holidays. And then in the spring we're going to be doing Little Women, the Broadway musical Little Women. So
great. Well, for the radio play, maybe we'll have to have you on.
That would be awesome. We would love that.
we've been speaking with Timpanogos Valley Theater board member and cast member Nathan Moulton. Anything else you want to mention this morning, Nate?
No, just we hope to see you out to our production of Forever Plaid, and we appreciate you having us on here. Thank you.
Well, thanks for coming on. Construction crews hired by Park City plan to continue work on the Main Street water line at the end of the month. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports parking will be free in Old Town during the project.
In April, Park City began a years-long project to replace aging water infrastructure in Old Town. Construction finished in June and was initially slated to resume in the spring of 2025. But Historic Park City Alliance Executive Director Ginger Wicks says Main Street businesses preferred an expedited timeline in order to limit sidewalk and road closures next summer.
Construction on the street during June was very impactful to the businesses.
To get a head start on next summer's work schedule, crews will begin construction September 30th. All work on Main Street will be uphill of 4th Street and will take place Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. There will be intermittent water shutoffs in the area, and people nearby should expect noise from machinery. A portion of Main Street will also be closed to vehicle traffic. Park City has accepted the HPCA's request to make parking in Old Town free during construction. The only time parking will not be free is during special events, including Halloween and Shot Ski on October 12th.
So it's a great time for everyone to support the businesses that are going to be impacted and come out and enjoy Main Street.
Park City Public Utilities engineer Griffin Lloyd says the major benefit of speeding up construction is the ability to end sidewalk closures by June, when summer tourism traffic picks up in Park City. Lloyd says construction became harder this summer following Memorial Day.
And then we started getting a lot of feedback from the businesses, as well as a lot of the tourists walking along the street, that businesses were a little tougher to get into with sidewalk repairs. And we also, I would say, slowed down a little bit because of all the foot traffic. So being out of the sidewalk in June is probably a benefit to us, as well as the businesses and definitely the tourists.
More information about the upcoming construction and details on road closures can be found at kpcw.org. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.